Radio.
This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Cat lovers and feline friends, it's time for Adele Park's Quirky Catnips.
Today on Quirky Catnips, we're airing a chapter of Quirky Cat Goes Splat by Adele Park. This frightfully funny tale is narrated by the ever-so-snarky Skitters the Cat. Find out what happens when Skitters goes cattywampus for a kitten named Harriet. Tune in each week to hear a new chapter of Quirky Cat Goes Splat, only on Pet Life Radio. Meow, kitties!
Audio recording St. George presents Quirky Cat Goes Splat. Written, produced, and edited by Adele Park. Narrated by a full cast.
Splat!
Meow, bitches.
Twisted Tales by Skitters the Cat. Part 16.
All of us are damaged goods. Life has a way of dinging and danging us no matter how sterling our karma may be. It's not hard to figure out how a fetching meower like Harriet could wind up with such a detached attitude. Just look at the religious Looney Tunes she was conspiring with before the Prophet of Zion Flats torched her home at Juniper Hollow with Harriet and her sister trapped inside. Harriet's mother was a full-blown belladonna addict. Her handler was fond of putting belladonna extract in her milk as part of some juju type of sorcery. As a result, she had trouble carrying kitties. When Juniper Hollow was burned like a sacrificial stack of bad luck, Harriet was just a tiny tot in a litter of two. Harriet and her sister were in the process of being weaned and still quite vulnerable. Somehow, their mother managed to drag them to safety, only to return to the smoking house where she burnt like a piece of untended kitty bacon. After the fire, Harriet's sister sought shelter in a house on Granite Ridge owned by a crotchety curmudgeon named Boyd Fletcher. He dubbed her Kitty Castaway, but later changed the name to Miss Kitty once she had won over his crusty heart. Harriet stubbornly remained at Juniper Hollow, waiting for Evangeline, the girl who had befriended her from birth. To Evangeline's credit, she did try to care for Harriet as best she could. The mother of my twins would often tuck granola bars and dried fruit into the pocket of Evangeline's unsightly polygamous romper. I was usually called upon to take a bite of these items, presumably to make sure they wouldn't kill Harriet. Thanks, girlfriend. Juniper Hollow isn't far from Zion Flats, unless you're a 5-year-old and it's in the middle of the night. Not winning any popularity contests at home, Evangeline was allowed to wander off at will. This was good news for Harriet, who received frequent midnight visits from her human. Orinda, Evangeline's angry custodian, seemed especially hopeful of the chances this poor child would collide with disaster. Nonetheless, Orinda would soon discover things wouldn't go according to plans.
Chapter 16. Orinda.
The only thing I loathe more than children are animals. Now I've got both of these vile species riding in my van. My only consolation is that I will never again have to tend to someone else's children or pets. I endured a tedious, nerve-wracking drive from Gecko's Gulch to the Social Services Building in Las Vegas. I felt unusually skittish, constantly looking over my shoulder to see if we were being followed. Someone alerted Nephi that Evangeline had been gone all night. Stupid, selfish girl. Evangeline put both of us in danger. It was all over that mangy orange cat she calls Harriet. No matter how much I punished her, Evangeline kept sneaking over to Juniper Hollow to feed that repulsive creature. Because of Evangeline's filthy fiend, our lives were now in jeopardy. I used the ride to Las Vegas to explain the new order to Evangeline. First, she had to stop sniveling. It was uncalled for and unbecoming. Besides, she'd gotten her way with the cat. I smiled inwardly at the thought that Evangeline's new caretaker would have to deal with Harriet. The traffic in Las Vegas was terrifying. Worried that I would get hit, I clutched the steering wheel and moved my face about 3 inches from the windshield. I'm not sure how this helped, but it gave me an odd sense of comfort. Miraculously, we arrived at social services in one piece. My niece, Isla Ray, and her caretaker, Meredith Andrews, had made arrangements to take Evangeline off my hands. I was relieved to know I wouldn't have to cart around this impertinent child any longer. I've been cursed with seeing to Evangeline since the moment she slipped into this world, obscure and deathly white. Her mother, Rebecca, took little interest in her strange child, except when she needed someone to cast incantations upon. The rest of the time, Rebecca regarded Evangeline like the nuisance she is. In Zion Flats, men are the only ones considered to be of value. Women are treated as chattel, put on earth to propagate the species. Rebecca had her own way of settling this score, tarrying with the occult, trying to manifest bad luck, like there wasn't already plenty of that to go around. My brother, the prophet Nephi, assigned me the duty of reporting on any of Rebecca's activities that did not adhere to the word of wisdom. She would not stay sweet, as the prophet commanded. I was also made to give briefings on the activities of my second husband, Nicholas DeLuca. This task was more complicated. Nicholas had opened my eyes to new possibilities, ones that were now propelling me to drive a shadow child and her dirty cat into the city of sin. I had no intention of staying in Las Vegas any longer than it took to drop off my unwanted ward. I was leaving the desert for good. There never was anything here for me. None of my sister wives ever liked me. No one liked me. The only friend I've ever had is a con artist, and he's in jail. Growing up, I was relentlessly taunted by the other children in Zion Flats. They called me Fuzzy Wuzzy and Grizzly Adams. Heavenly Father must not have wanted me to suffer the sin of vanity because I was given an unsightly amount of body hair. I've got a sturdy build, and my teeth aren't good. My lineage was my only saving grace. Before my brother Nephi became prophet, that position was held by our father. When I was 13, I was given in marriage to Hiram Stratton, a doctor and member of the Sacred Order in Zion Flats. Hiram was an ambitious, well-established member of the community. Everyone is on Medicaid, so he had lots of patients with guaranteed reimbursement. The church owns the clinic, though Hiram benefited handsomely from his position. I was Hiram's fourth wife in what was to become a plural marriage involving more than 24 women. Because of my age and family status, I was allowed to live in Hiram's main house. I was petrified the first night Hiram came to my bedroom. I quickly discovered my fears were baseless. Hiram had no intention of consecrating our marriage, calling me uglier than a slop bucket of armpits. Angry that he'd been assigned such an unattractive wife, Hiram made me sleep on the floor during the nights he was scheduled to stay in my room. I shivered on a homemade rug without a blanket or pillow. I was still a teenager, growing into an oversized adult at a rapid rate. My body ached from sleeping on the floor. Eventually, I caught pneumonia, rendering me feverish and exhausted. When my illness worsened, Hiram publicly disgraced me by asking for prayers for his barren wife during church services one Sunday. Ashamed and humiliated, I fell out of favor with my husband. In a polygamist community, that means the husband no longer engages in marital relations. Since the purpose of such unions is to produce children, there was no reason for Hiram to acknowledge me at all. I didn't care that I was never to be a mother. Even then, I found children to be bothersome and bad-smelling. I wanted to be a nurse, a suggestion I timidly made to Hiram. One of my sister wives was already a nurse, and another one was in school. Hiram responded by telling me sick people didn't want to be touched by a hairy dysentery like me. I was sent to work at the community farm instead. I awoke before dawn 7 days a week to work in the dairy, a good 20-minute hike in the dark. I was responsible for the morning milking of 120 cows. After that, I mucked out stalls and cleaned the milking equipment. This went on day after day, year after year. After a massive heart attack brought on by not following his own advice, my husband, Hiram, was returned to Heavenly Father. I was a widow for 27 days before being reassigned to Nicholas DeLuca. I was given in marriage as a way of keeping tabs on his activities. Nicholas had been told of my supposed inability to have children, meaning he wasn't expected to perform his duties as a husband. Nonetheless, I was elevated from manure shoveler at the dairy farm to first wife of Juniper Hollow. Cunning and clever, Nicholas took the tactic of befriending me. I was caught off guard by this unexpected dynamic, falling hard for a man I knew to be a criminal. Nicholas was always asking me what I thought of this or that. It was the first time anyone cared to hear my opinion about anything. Our first 3 months of marriage were the happiest times of my life. In those days, I truly enjoyed being married, preparing succulent meals to share with Nicholas at the end of the day. Nearly every evening that summer, we sat in the open square of space on top of the house, which Nicholas called a widow's walk. We'd eat our dessert there, enjoying the stars and cool evening breeze. Contrary to the doctrine and covenants of our church, Nicholas consumed alcohol, sometimes to an extreme extent. As his wife, it was not my place to comment on these activities to anyone but the prophet Nephi.
Hang tight, kiddies. We'll be back in a scratch. What's more quirky than cannabis? A reality TV show where everyone is half-baked. Quirky Cannabis Country by Adele Park is a trip you'll never forget. Get Quirky Cannabis Country today on Audible.com. Quirky Cannabis Country. Snag your copy before the whole place goes up in smoke.
You know the expression, cats have nine lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations, too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We now return to more of Quirky Cat Goes Splat by Adele Park on Pet Life Radio.
Nicholas liked to talk when he drank, fondly recalling memories of his boyhood summers in Oregon. I became fascinated with these inebriated ramblings, longing to see the ocean. Other than the trips I made to the liquor store in Mesquite, Nevada, I'd never even been outside the state of Utah. Once, when I was in Mesquite buying alcohol for Nicholas, I stopped in the library. I asked to see some information about Oregon and was surprised when a young girl led me to a computer. She brought up some of the most breathtaking images. I made a promise to myself to see this in person. I didn't care if I had to die trying. My happiness evaporated when Rebecca joined our marriage. Bewitched by Rebecca's beauty, Nicholas was consumed with her, engaging in wild nights that left me chagrined. My status as first wife was never honored by Rebecca. She took little, if any, direction from me. Rebecca's only responsibility was to maintain the garden, which she quickly turned into a gypsy jungle. The entire yard was a tangle of color and disarray. The widow's walk once a quiet sanctuary, was crowded with potted plants, trained to crawl upwards in a way that made the walls look like they were growing. Clusters of purple belladonna plants sprang up all over the property. A few days shy of her first wedding anniversary, Rebecca gave birth to Evangeline. I don't take much stock in omens, but that birth was a hard one, coming on a night when the wind was howling so hard, I thought God himself was sending out a warning. Not long after that, Rebecca started drinking alcohol with Nicholas, apparently fearing no repercussions from the prophet. She was often too woozy to look after her newborn. I was left to feed and change Evangeline, chores I did with bitter resentment. Asserting her influence with Nicholas, Rebecca demanded that he sleep in her room every night since I wasn't propagating the species. Rebecca claimed to be trying to produce a male heir and thus needed the attentions of her husband to accomplish this important task. I missed my evening talks with Nicholas. Eventually, though, he came back around in search of an ally. Rebecca was indulging in more than just wine. She was using belladonna to escape the realities of her life. As a result, she miscarried one child after another. Nicholas seemed more concerned with Rebecca's radical behavior than he was by all the lost babies. Rebecca often became violent, issuing baseless accusations. At times, she'd stay out all night, often bringing Evangeline with her. Evangeline would appear at dawn, dirty and smelling of smoke. I don't know where Rebecca was setting those fires. They were no doubt part of the drug-crazed rituals she had become fond of hosting. Disturbed by this, as well as the uptick in vicious fights, Nicholas resumed spending time with me when Rebecca was off on one of her mad outings. I was often awakened by the sounds of shrill screams and objects being thrown. I remained in my room, understanding it was not my place to interfere in the relations between a husband and one of his wives. In any other polygamist marriage, Rebecca would have been reminded to stay sweet in a not-so-sweet manner. Things were nearing a boiling point. Nicholas had once owned a company in Las Vegas that made headstones. A man he associated with was killed on his property. The police accused Nicholas of laundering money. He was offered a reduced sentence in exchange for testimony about the murder. It was common knowledge that the DeLuca family was part of the mob. Fearing his kinfolk more than the authorities, Nicholas disappeared. During the 5 years Nicholas hid at Juniper Hollow, one of the men involved with the murder was sent to prison. The other one died under mysterious circumstances before he could be prosecuted. Thinking it was safe to return to Las Vegas, and frustrated with his ungovernable wife, Nicholas began to speak of leaving. Tempted by the fantasy that I too could escape, I listened, withholding the information from Nephi. It was the first time in my life that I knowingly went against my prophet. It's unclear if Rebecca suspected Nicholas was planning to leave, or if her behavior was just a natural progression of her mental deterioration. She was agitated and hadn't slept in the days leading up to her death. Rebecca had been bringing Evangeline home from moonlit excursions with her mouth stained purple. Surely Nicholas must have known Rebecca was feeding their daughter belladonna, given that he sometimes ingested it himself. But Nicholas had his own problems. He was under constant pressure from the prophet to finish his work for the new temple in Zion Flats. Nephi called Nicholas into a meeting on a day when Rebecca was particularly strung out. Claiming she was starving, Rebecca prepared a lunch of blueberry hotcakes with warm syrup. Enticed by the inviting smells, I joined Rebecca at the table. I should have known better. Halfway through lunch, my head began to cloud and my stomach revolted. Certain that I had been poisoned with belladonna, I forced myself to evacuate the contents of my stomach. It helped, but I was left feeling weak and dizzy. I took to my bed, hoping to sleep off the illness. In the evening, I was awakened by the sound of furious screams coming from the yard. Nicholas had returned from his meeting. I could hear him accusing Rebecca of trying to drown Evangeline in the christening font. Rebecca claimed she was just trying to baptize her daughter, knowing full well that duty can only be performed by the prophet. The fight moved inside, with Rebecca screeching and throwing things. I had confided in Nephi that Rebecca was spinning out of control. Most of the fights happened at night, so Nephi instructed me to cut the power to the house if things got out of hand. I heard Nicholas holler in pain, a sign the violence had escalated. Running outside, I grabbed a pair of wire cutters and threw the house into darkness. Moments later, Nicholas burst from the house, heading for Fletcher's sneak. Somehow, I knew he was leaving for good. Just as I was deciding what to do next, Evangeline appeared at my side, wet and frightened. The sensible thing would have been to let Rebecca do what she will with her own daughter. Instead, I loaded this pesky child into the boat and rowed her to the other side of the lake, instructing her to climb to safety. Nicholas had oftentimes brought Evangeline to Granite Ridge while he was working, so she knew about the ladder in one of the catacombs. As I was rowing back to the house, I heard, rather than saw, Rebecca throw herself off the widow's walk. I shall never forget the sound of those wounded yowls. I cleaned up the scene as best as I could, dragging Rebecca's body away from the house. Then I got in the van and drove to Zion Flats to alert Nephi. To my consternation, custody of Evangeline was given to me. We moved into one of Nephi's homes, sharing a small room. Thankfully, I wasn't sent back to work at the dairy. Since I now had a license and a van, I drove the group of women employed at Gecko's Gulch to work during the week. Nephi wanted me to serve as a deterrent for idle talk. As always, I was to let Nephi know about any transgressions that might be occurring. I got a job in the kitchen, a relatively private space with a phone that I was granted full access to. At Moon McKenna's suggestion, I began to call my niece, Isla Ray, on a regular basis. Every so often, I was required to take Evangeline to the Social Services Building in St. George. A few weeks ago, I was confronted with the news that Nicholas had been picked up on some federal charges I was unaware of. He'd made a deal to serve as an informant in exchange for a lighter prison sentence. While Nicholas feared tattling on his associates in Las Vegas, he had no qualms about selling out the people who provided cover for him in Utah. The government wanted to crack down on what it considered to be welfare fraud happening in Zion Flats. Having spent most of my life working at the community farm, I had little knowledge of the church redistribution program. Like all the women in Zion Flats, I gave my welfare checks to the prophet. I had no idea what happened to the money once it was out of my hands. Even if I did, there was no way I would help Nicholas betray my brother. Liar that he is, Nicholas never followed through on his promise to help me. He took off, leaving me stuck with Evangeline. I was sorry that Nicholas was now imprisoned, though it paved the way for my own emancipation. All I needed to do was sign over custodial rights of Evangeline to Meredith Andrews, the woman in charge of Isla Ray. It was Meredith, not Nicholas, who offered some money for me to start over elsewhere. I was even assured someone would help me apply for a grant to go to nursing school. Now, because of Evangeline's foolish behavior, these plans have been thrown into total chaos.
What happens when cats and ghosts collide? Find out in Quirky Cat Gets Ghosted by Adele Park. This quirky tale is narrated by the ever-so-snarky Skitters the Cat. Skitters finds himself in the most unfortunate position of having to help his nemesis, Blue McKenna, go to heaven, hell, or somewhere other than where he is. Otherwise, Blue will continue to bug Skitters as much in death as she did in life. Quirky Cat Gets Ghosted is a frightfully fun prance through the desert. Quirky Cat Gets Ghosted. Get ghosted today on Audible, Downpour, and Spotify. Meow, kitties.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.